Mustafa, who is taking the place of Hufanga.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Oh, Al Michaels on the call, huh?
Man.
I love me some Al Michaels. He's a legend. And yeah. I think you got to give him his respect. That man, he called the earthquake game here during, obviously, the World Series in 1989, the Bay Bridge Series. You know, he won an Emmy for calling that earthquake game. Obviously, the earthquake takes place before the game between the A's and the Giants in the World Series in 89. He won an Emmy, but it wasn't a sports Emmy. He got a news Emmy for breaking news, which is really spectacular. But he's an absolute legend in the industry, but he's lost his fastball, much like that of Bob Costas. You know, the hardest thing to do as a sportscaster, especially a legend like that of Al Michaels, knowing when to walk away and keeping the legacy intact, because he just is not the same dude. He has not aged well. No one does, right? Especially when you're a play-by-play guy, you got to recognize that you don't have it any longer. And as it pains me to say that Al Michaels, I grew up with this guy. It's Al Michaels for crying out loud. But I think that, you know, listening to him, Bob Costas, who's getting a lot of blowback on the ALCS hasn't started, but in the divisional playoffs and covering the Yankees and the Kansas City Royals. But, some serious gaffes on the part of Mr. Michaels the other night.
What did you make of Bob Costas? Because I know a lot of fans are calling maybe out his favoritism towards the Yankees throughout the series. Al Michaels, just an older guy, calling plays. Still going to be mistakes here or there, but you know, it's one day a week, whatnot. It's not like he's doing, you know, the major primetime Sunday night football games anymore. But Bob Costas calling multiple games in a row, people felt like that he was hoping the Yankees would win that series over the Royals, which is not the job you're supposed to do in a playoff game, being the play-by-play guy.
Yeah, he had the wrong voice inflection, especially on what was that double play started with Bobby Witt. I know it's getting a lot of play. I don't think that he's smart enough, and he's still brilliant studio host. And I watch him on MLB Network.
Sure.
I just think that it's part of, again, just that he's lost it. He's a little bit older, and it's not that he has favoritism. It's just that he's not consciously aware of these things anymore. And that's just that's what happens as you get longer in the tooth and you get older and you do these things. You become susceptible to this sort of criticism. Whereas if he was on his game, he's not making those sort of mistakes. I don't think it's a personal interest that he wants the Yankees to win. I just think it's an oversight by an older man that shouldn't be behind the mic in a game of that magnitude anymore. So,
it doesn't seem like play-by-play broadcasting has changed so much, but is there some of this new generational younger players watching games in a different way and wanting certain things out of their broadcasters that, and it might be a boring conversation to have on the air, but, you know, do you think things have changed generationally that a person like Bob Costas, the way he calls games, really isn't, you know, doesn't interest those of the younger viewers?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I think that his pacing, the way he's calling a game, just his overall approach is something that has been good, but it's very 90s-esque. I don't think that he stepped into 2024, and there's a lot of young broadcasters that do it a different way, and they're throwing out whether it's statistical knowledge, but they're part of that Gen Y, or they're part of the millennial sort of fan base that is now obviously targeted by the advertisers, and they're speaking to their base, whereas Bob Costas is an older man trying to connect with people that are 20, 30 years younger than him in many cases. So I'm assuming you're out on Bob Costas and baseball.
Well, I think I'm indifferent. I think the Yankees always gave you that nostalgic throwback, you know, the original baseball, right, where you don't mind having an announcer like Bob Costas call some games. But even then, like, people were criticizing Michael Kay during the Tigers and Astros series of, you know, maybe showing some favoritism in that one, or just calling games in an awkward fashion. Where
he is the Yankee announcer. He's on the Yankee payroll, so
right. He is for sure. But even then, like I watch plenty of, you know, Yankee broadcasts and Mets broadcasts, and you know Ron Darling's out there doing his thing, and you know, I didn't think anything of it, but then Bob Costas, I was like, wow, I am bored out of my mind. Yeah. But I don't mind that sometimes. Growing up in the 90s and watching baseball in the early 2000s, like John Miller and Joe Morgan on ESPN's Baseball Tonight, like we watched it all the time growing up, and you know, it was a classic. I love this kind of thing, the way they broadcast the games. And I think John Miller, for you know, as old as he is, maybe he doesn't have his fastball anymore, but he still has that great changeup to throw you off your guard sometimes. You know, adios pelota. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, my mind was so focused on Dodgers-Padres that entire time, where it was like, I don't care what Bob Costas does, really. I don't care what Michael Kay does, really. My mind is just, go Padres. Someone knock off the Dodgers. I can't stand this anymore, the way they win games.
Oh, and you're still alive because your Metropolitans are my Metropolitans. They're right for the job. As here come the and this, believe you me, I get it. There are a lot of Padre fans, yeah, and a lot of people want to see San Diego win. But if you're corporate American, meaning that if you're Fox and you got these games, the NL Championship Series being decided by a team out of Los Angeles and a team from New York, that's exactly what you want. That's the sweet spot. That's how everybody makes money. So they're still high-fiving one another, the suit and ties that are Fox, because that's the series that everybody wants. And I know that the Dodgers are enemy number one. There's something about L.A. I think that when you spend that much money on your payroll, they get the best teams. They get the best players every single year. I just think that innately a lot of people are just going to hate on you. And that's sort of what's pervasive, I think, not only here in San Francisco. I don't think it's just relegated to the Bay Area, but I think throughout the entire country, they become public enemy number one. Of course, Shohei's going there. Of course, Mookie Betts is going to go there. And Freddie Freeman, oh, God. You talk about it. Hating on
Patrick. Can't cue up the crying video.
Oh, no, don't do that. But that guy is just too perfect. And by all accounts, he's a really nice guy. So, yeah, you know, that's part of the problem there as well. But it's going to be a fun series. By the way, Risotto, we got a new producer here. Steven Risotto, who I've had on the show before talking a little sports. Rosie, I know you know your baseball. Any thoughts initially on the Mets and the Dodgers?
So I have a question for you guys. What would be more insufferable? Would it be Mets and Yankees, so another Subway Series rematch, or Yankees-Dodgers?
I'd like to see Yankees-Dodgers, just because I can go that far back in time and remember those series back when I was a child. So give me, again, I don't like it when the country is just when you siphon off the rest of the country. Yes, I know there'd be some rooting interest one way or the other when you get to the Mets and the Yankees, but you'd like to have at least both coasts represented. So if you're talking about that power out of the East Coast and the Yankees who are so divisive and the Dodgers who are also so divisive, to me, that has a lot more intrigue. And plus, I don't hate the Yankees as much as everybody else. I do hate the Dodgers, though.
It's a great question, Stephen, because yesterday I was with my wife driving her to her parents' house, and I told her in the car, well, growing up, I was taught two things in life. You hate the Yankees, and you hate the Dodgers. You hate the way the Yankees buy players and try to buy championships, and you hate the Dodgers because you're from the Bay Area. And we were driving to my in-law's house, and I told her, I go, if there's one thing in life I never want to see, it's obviously, you know, my wife and my dog passing away, but I never want to see a Dodgers-Yankees World Series matchup ever. I just can't do it. I can't stand it. And so I get it for baseball. It's great. Otani, Soto, Judge, these juggernauts on both coasts going head-to-head. But I'd rather see the Guardians, Tigers, or Mets playing in the World Series for my sake. I went to Azusa Pacific University in SoCo. Shout out Stephen Vogt, the alumni there. Hopefully he wins today and takes home the ALDS for the Cleveland Guardians. But my goodness, I wouldn't even watch a game.
Do you know who the most?
I just couldn't stand it.
The most popular, renowned football player is out of your program?
That's Christian Okoye.
Yes, the Nigerian Nightmare.
The worst
hands in the history of the NFL.
Well, don't forget, Jackie Slater also coaches there.
Oh, did he really? Oh, yeah, he didn't play there. Oh, okay.
No.
All right. But back to my man, Steven Rizzotto. It's almost as bad as Reardon versus SI. So I find out that Rizzotto, Rosie here, went to Reardon High School, which, of course, I went to SI, so we used to just beat the crap out of him every year. But Rosie is actually representing the Crusaders of Reardon. So come in here. Let me get you in a headlock, because I have no respect for Reardon people, Rosie.
So I am very disappointed to know that you are an SI cherry. We were talking before. But one thing that we do agree on is we both don't like Sarah.
That's true. There's something about Sarah. That's, of course, the alma mater of one Barry Bonds, going back in the days of Brian Jeffries, who came out of that program. By the way, so that's so funny, because that was the first thing I was going to ask you as to whether they still refer to people from my high school as cherries.
They do.
And it was like a four-letter word. Literally, you would get into a fight if you went to SI and somebody called you a cherry. And as I get older, I go to college, and I'm thinking back, I'm like, what the hell is a cherry? It's like a piece of fruit, and I'm ready to throw down. But that's so funny. Do you know, by the way, because I don't, the origin of cherries in SI?
I have no idea. I'd have to look into the archives of who might know something about that. But what I do know is that Reardon, we are the Rabbits.
You are the Rabbits, yes. Which I also don't know where that was derived from.
And I barely heard that in my 4 years there.
Yes,
so.
You were the Rabbits. Yeah. Was there a SH were the Irish, but I don't remember having any sort of a moniker or a name calling sort of edict that we've...
Yeah, I think they're clean from this.
Yeah. Reardon, wow, okay. Now I know exactly who it is that I'm dealing with here. So,
well, next time I'll wear all my Reardon gear. I'll wear all my Reardon gear next time, and
you
then
know,
you'll have to
so
suffer.
What's interesting, yeah, is that, and there's like maybe 8 people in the audience that care about this that went to SI and Reardon, but I just got to tell you that Reardon, SI, and SH, we did not like Sarah. And granted, we were the 3 schools that were in the city, Sacred Heart, Reardon, and St. Ignatius. Meanwhile, you know, you had Bellarmine down in San Jose. You had Mitty was also out in San Jose. And you had Sarah that was out in San Mateo. But Bellarmine used to kick our butt in football every year. They were just the powerhouse. Is that true for you as well, Rosie?
Yeah, they were very good. The schools down south were very good. St. Francis, you could throw them
Saint
in that
Francis,
bunch, too. They're,
yes.
Yeah, Valley Christian was good in baseball when I was there. And I don't know. Maybe it's just the I think there's a respect factor with Sarah, but I just think it's just hatred.
Yes.
Very hatred.
There was
the
something about Sarah High School. I remember opening day. This is back when they would have opening day for the San Francisco Giants, and they would always tell you, Brother Draper would say, listen, I don't want excuses. It's mandatory that you be there, because opening day would be in the middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday, and everybody would come in with illnesses or I can't be there. Half the student body would be, you know, watching the Giants. And this back in the day, this is the stick. And so Brother Draper would say, listen, you're getting a week's worth of detention if you're not here. I need a letter from a doctor. So one year, I happened to be at opening day, and there I wasn't sitting in the section, but there was an entire section in the upper deck at Candlestick, and it was nothing but blows. I mean, not just a row of people fighting, an entire section. We're talking over 600 people getting after it, and it turned out that it was Sarah and SI that went after it on a memorable opening day way back when Candlestick was the place where you would do that sort of thing. And of course, nobody was paying any attention to the Giants, because they were probably getting run 10-0. So there you go, a little knowledge for you, Rosie, as Reardon and SI. Where did you go to high school, Sterling?
I went to Brian Christian in Walnut Creek, so nowhere near you guys.
Not any knowledge of the school that Sterling went to, Rosie?
None whatsoever.
Okay.
We are playing the North Gates and the College Parks of the world. Valley Christian was on our radar for sure, but more so in the East Bay, never in the city.
Okay, that's
so
why I've never heard of them.
I'm thinking off the top of my head, the best athlete out of Reardon. I know they had like Steve Sewell play for the Broncos back in the day, but who am I missing? Who am I overlooking here?
The big one that's always talked about kind of is Kevin Rustani, the NBA star.
Oh my
Kevin
God,
Rustani.
That's like from the 60s, right?
That's kind of the claim of it. There's a few football ones too. Trying to think off the top of my head, but we are
or the Jordans, Steve Jordan, place kicker, and Frank Jordan. I want to say played at USC. They were guys that went to Reardon. They were this family of kickers that went to St. Stephen's. Shout out, and they used to kick collegiately for USC in some big games.
Yeah, there's definitely a few others that have had college success, college football, college basketball. But we are known for for high school basketball. That is the Reardon way. That is the football program's kind of building up right now, but we the mainstay at Reardon has always been basketball.
All right. Well, let's before, because I know you're a baseball. You're still writing for somebody. Who are you writing for?
A bunch of places, but most recently covering the Giants for SF Bay.
All right. Who's winning the World Series this year, and who's playing in it? In all seriousness.
You know, I think it's hard to bet against the Mets right now. They have a good thing going for them. It seems like the vibes are in their favor. And, you know, talking about what Major League Baseball wants to see, I think they like this NLCS a lot with the Mets and the Dodgers. And the two MVP, I know it was mentioned, Sterling, I think you mentioned the Lindor MVP train against the Ohtani MVP train. And that's going to be a fun matchup. But in terms of who's winning at all, I think it's got to be the Mets. They could outpitch the Dodgers in this series. And I think, let's say, if the Yankees win Game 5 or the Tigers win Game 5, there's not enough there to match up with what the Mets have. So I think it's the year of the Metropolitans, and we'll see what happens.
Sterling, who do you like?
I mean, selfishly, I want to say the Mets. I just have a hard time going against the Yankees. I don't think they're the best team in baseball this year, but I just think, you know, what they have going, if they can get Judge going, you have him and Soto back-to-back, it is a nightmare for any pitching staff. I will say this, though. Wouldn't it be something to watch Giants legend Sean Manaea take down Shohei Ohtani? Wouldn't that be something watch down in Chavez Ravine?
God, where did Manaea come from? Did you see him in his last outing?
He was great.
Oh,
he was great.
My goodness.
They got Kota Senga back. I mean, the Mets are feeling it, man. The vibes are good. Honestly, I don't care who wins as long as it ain't the Dodgers. That Mickey Mouse ring in 2020 doesn't count.
Yeah.
You hold them off. They pay all that money, deferred money for Shohei. You keep that man out of the World Series, that entire contract, I will be a happy, happy man.
It's going to be fun to see Shohei under the big lights, though, because that's the one reason why he needed to get out of his former team and wanted to go to L.A. is just for this very reason, is to see how he's going to respond, because I want to say what this guy did this past year, I've never seen it before. It might be the greatest year in the history of a single player in a baseball season. So Shohei is good for baseball. I think that we would all agree with that. And the fact that he deferred the money, it's sort of tough to hate on him as well. But collectively, it's the Dodgers. So I'm with you, man.
Right.
I want to see them get spanked.
Where do you sit? Because when I hear Shohei, who had a phenomenal season, 50-50, just one of the greatest seasons of all time, as a Giants fan, that one irks me when I know a guy that was here in 2001 hit 73 home runs. And I'm like, that's the greatest season of all time. Like, the OPS is out of the roof. He had more intentional walks than most guys have hits in a season.
Sure,
like to me, Bonds still has the greatest season of all time, but Shohei was great. But when I hear that, I'm like, do we forget what happened, 23 years ago?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
It's a really good point. I think that, I hate to go there, but I think that the steroids and that dark cloud still hangs over his accomplishments, especially when it comes to that one season. And so whether it's accurate or not, I think it taints a lot of what it is that he did. And maybe it shouldn't, but I do think that that's, at least for me, that's the first thing that I think about when I think about that remarkable season put together by Barry Bonds. And what's really unfortunate is that he was just so amazing that year. Because remember, everybody walked him. Because why wouldn't you? For crying out loud, Bucky Showalter walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded, saying, I'd rather give up a run than three or four. He was that good. And the reason that you would walk the guy, because he would literally, if you didn't walk him, you were pitching around him. And so maybe
he'd walk anyways.
Maybe every at bat he'd get one pitch, like maybe one pitch that would be sort of hittable or in that zone. And I want to say that year, 85% of the time with that one pitch, he squared it up. It was ridiculous what it is that he did. And I think that he is one of the greatest, he's in that very rarefied air, but I think that the stigma of what he did off the field and the performance-enhancing drugs that were alleged For crying out loud, the dude's head was growing at the age of 40. He had to get a new hat size, him and Sammy Sosa, is always going to be a mark on his house. And I think that when you have to compare the two with Shohei's, as far as we know, is clean. And when you think about what it is that he just
accomplished. Well, he had the gambling stuff.
Well, it was either him or his translator, right? Or did he? Are you still in the conspiracy?
We all forget what happened all 5 months ago during
the
season.
Are you not believing that Shohei had nothing to do with it? Because there's a lot of people that believe that much money comes out of your account and you had no idea.
Yeah.
They're not passing the sniff test there, are they?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly fishy. And obviously, that doesn't change how you play on the field unless you're, you know, pulling a Pete Rose and whatnot. But even then, like, I don't care Bonds took steroids, man. It was the greatest memories of my life watching him park homers in McCovey Cove, watching the chickens up on there on the cove because they walked him over and over again. And look, Bonds actually played the field, for God's sake.
Yeah,
I mean, Shohei's DH'ing every single night. I don't care what you do. We used to talk about how DHs didn't deserve the MVP, and now if they're the greatest players of all time,
yeah.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Well, I think also what you have to factor into this, that he didn't do it this year, but the fact that he pitches, you know, when he is in the field is really just the guy is just, and let's see where he's at next year when he takes to the mound, because apparently he's going to get the ball and try and be that guy again. So, yeah, I'm with you. I used to do a show out in Seattle, and you think people didn't like me here back in Seattle. I said, Edgar Martinez, who is beloved out there. And I'm like,
one of the greatest DHs ever.
Is not going to the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry.
Man.
Your lumpy butt has got to get back to third base or first base. It had been so long, I don't even remember what position he played anymore. But the idea that you're on a stationary bike and watching the game down in the clubhouse on an HD screen while everybody's out there, you know, tracking ground balls and walking down fly balls, it's just, you know, you're a good hitter, but let's leave it at that. We'll give you the Silver Slugger Award, but we're not going MVP.
You want the Hank Aaron Award? Fine. You ain't getting the MVP.
I had the same issue with pitchers, Sterling. I don't know how you feel about that, but I was like, there's a Cy Young for you. And I know they'll always say it's sort of contradictory because good pitching beats good hitting, and pitching is so important to the game. But I always had an issue with them being the MVP, really. I mean, in one league, you're not getting to the plate, so... this is before the DH was in the National League, and I'm like, how can you be the MVP if you never hit? We have an award. It's called the Cy Young, and we'll give that to you, but not an MVP.
And the game has changed just so much. Back in the day, guys were hitting 300 with 5 home runs getting into the Hall of Fame. It didn't matter. You know, it was average in contact league. And even when the Giants are winning championships in 2010, 12, and 14, it was a pitching, defense, and contact offense. It didn't hit home runs, really. So the game has changed so much in a decade's worth of time that MVPs are winning, or DHs are winning the MVPs and are heralded as, you know, some of the greatest players of all time, which, you know, David Ortiz, all due respect, I'm wearing the hat right now for his career. Love those guys, but it's like, you know, I don't know. Greatest season of all time? Barry Bonds has that in my case.
All right. That's certainly, there's a lot of people that would agree with you. All right, before we get to the break, we just got to clean some up. Somebody's jumping all over me because I ripped Bob Costas and then just went on a rant about SI and Reardon. He's like, good sports talk radio. Yeah, all right, you might have a point there. We continue.
Dan DeVoe and the Bob Costas and 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, we continue here on 95.7 The Game. We'll get back to the 49ers. I also want to take a tour around the NFL and see what's what.
Ooh.
Sterling Bennett, Dan DeVoe, we'll close the show after this.
Back to 95.7 The Game.
Wrap up the show, Sterling Bennett, Dan DeVoe. As we, before we get into the Niners and go back to the NFL, somebody in the text line wanted to talk a little Warriors. Sterling, any thoughts on the preseason? Are you feeling the Warriors? Is this going to be a new, improved, and a team that was better than that of a year ago?
I don't know. Maybe it's just my jadedness towards working the Warrior games the last 4 years. I'm just like, I don't care anymore. But no, for the sake of the fans, I mean, there's a lot to like. I, in a weird way, and people are going to hate this, I do think Clay leaving is almost an addition by subtraction. I get it. There's love there. We're always going to love Clay in the Bay, what he did for the team and the organization and what he means to the team. He's a legend in the Bay Area. Even last year, Captain Clay, all the things that maybe, you know, didn't break his way. I just think that the emotions that were there, sometimes you can just get the sense that Clay's emotions were a distraction at times. This is Kuminga's, what, fourth year now? Big things got to happen. This is Moody's fourth year. Big things got to happen. I think getting Buddy Hield in there to be a bench player, what seems like, is massive for the bench unit. Gary Payton's finally healthy again, hopefully, this year. There's a lot to like. I just think the West is stacked. And what they've done, I don't think is enough to, unless Kuminga takes a massive leap, a lot is still going to be on Curry's shoulders. I don't think they've done enough to take any pressure off of him. They're going to have him carry this team once again, which they're probably a better team than last year for sure. But I just don't think when they stack up in the Western Conference, they're going to be a top eight team again.
How many times are we going to go into a season or talk about this during the offseason that Jonathan Kuminga's got to take a huge leap?
That's your boy, though. Year. That's your boy.
I know, and I think he sort of leveled off after that second year, third year. But I'm waiting for it, too. It could happen.
I hope so.
Yeah, he's so young that you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But it's just so funny hearing you say that. Like, I think that, yeah, that's collectively everybody sort of feels that way. And it just seems every single year we're waiting for Jonathan Kuminga to take over the league. Here comes Jonathan Kuminga. It's now we're going on year four, believe it or not. So this could be. We'll see. I think what's interesting about the Warriors, so I have a lot of friends. I was talking to some friends yesterday at the sauna at the Dolphin Club. Couldn't go through an entire show with not one reference to the Dolphin Club. So there were friends that were just saying, hey, I like the Warriors this year. And I guess they've opened some eyes and what's going on here in the preseason. They look good against Sacramento, shooting all those threes and hitting all those threes. It's got a lot of people excited about the regular season. Now they're going to – Steve Kerr said as much, we're going to shoot the three. They've always shot the three, and now they're going to shoot it even more. I mean, that's beautiful.
Live and die.
Yeah, well, that's Steph Curry. That's music to his ears. Are you kidding me? I think they're going to be – entertaining as hell, and they always have
been.
But they're going to be so much fun to watch. But it's going to be sort of like a carnival act. They're going to be sort of like, you know, it's going to be a circus. It's going to be, yeah, fun. Look at this team shoot threes. But when it comes to serious, do you have seriousness in terms of do you have the foundation? Do you really have the players to win a championship? To your point, no. The landscape has changed. It's no longer their conference. They've given way to the Oklahomas of the world, the Minnesotas, the Dallases. You take your pick of four or five teams. And so for a team that was synonymous with NBA championships, a team that was synonymous with dominance and winning titles, the dynasty, so to speak, has now become sort of this act, if you will, where watch these guys step up and watch this team shoot threes like no one has ever shot them before. Come on, come all, come see the Golden State Warriors shoot threes led by the greatest who's ever done it, Steph Curry.
Because, the Ringley, you know, brothers.
The flip side of that is that when you live and die by a three, is that there's going to be nights when you, like they did in that preseason game against Sacramento, where it's fun and you roll a team by double digits, but then you live by that sword and you die by that sword because you're also going to be nights where you can't make a bucket. And when you're missing threes and that's all you can do and you're creating runouts the other way, that's going to be a long season of mine, as far as I'm concerned. And I know I have a tendency to be on, you know, an island of one, but I just, you know, this team is, they're no longer the hunted, they're the hunters. They're taking on a whole nother role here where it's not a rebuild. It's not a team that's, you know, they're not like Oklahoma of a couple of years ago when Oklahoma just clearly was in the midst of a rebuild so that they can get draft picks and put together the sort of dynasty that they are, or the sort of good team that they are right now. I'll stop short of calling them a dynasty until they win at least one title, but the Warriors aren't that. They're not a rebuild, but they're clearly in a transition here. I think we can admit that this is not a team that for the last decade plus, when we would sit here and talk about the Warriors, whether it was the preseason or handicapping this team, we would talk about them and their chances of getting back to the Western Conference Finals and winning a championship, as they did a couple of years ago against Boston. But now when we think about this team, we're thinking about a play-in. We're thinking about if they can capture a playoff series, that's a good season. The expectations have changed. The personnel has changed. And that foundation, the dynasty, so to speak, those core players are now, one is gone, and the other two are now in their mid to late 30s. So the entire complexion, the outlook in terms of the goals for the for this Warrior team going into a season have clearly changed, because they're no longer that group. They're no longer the dynasty that was synonymous with NBA titles.
When, go back to the three-point shooting, how many times last year did we say, just give me a two? I just get in the paint and give me a two, and they just could do it. Sometimes they wouldn't choose to do it. So it's not to say don't be optimistic. I mean, who doesn't love to watch Stephen Curry and Draymond Green when he isn't getting suspended play basketball? I mean, it's awesome. And, you know, Curry is the greatest point guard of all time next to Magic Johnson in almost everyone's estimates. So it's like there's reason to be optimistic. You can beat a lot of great teams if you can hit the three. I think the Warriors will be relatively competitive this season. And if Kuminga and Moody can take the next steps, which, fingers crossed, we've been waiting for a while, they're going to be fun to watch. They'll be more explosive. They'll run down the court. I think it was Kuminga that was talking when he said, like Steve said, be ready. It's going to be an up-tempo, high-energy offense this year, which is great to see, because last year and the last couple of years didn't feel that way. So there's reasons to be optimistic. There's reasons to be excited, and selfishly, I'm just happy I don't have to work those damn Christmas games anymore. I mean, I get to be home with the family, wake up on Christmas morning and eat the biscuits and gravy, open the gifts, and watch all the Christmas movies again, not have to worry about, you know, is Tim Roy connected and whatnot. But it's a fun time, Cam. Good luck.
Oh, Cam, is that, are you the new Sterling?
That's Cam.
All right, Cam.
Yep, I'm running the Warriors games. I'm the network coordinator. The first
there
game I ran, it was a doozy. It was a struggle. But then the second game, they had Grandy in here being like my Yoda, you know, just guiding me through. And then the third game last night, I went through it. Nobody here. Straight killed it. And then I see what Sterling was saying, because once you learn it and pick it up, it becomes natural. And I was like, wow, that was really easy. And I'm actually looking forward to doing more of the games, and I'm ready to see what happens.
Yeah, Sterling, any words of advice for my man Cam?
Tim Roy is great. RC will hold your hand. It'll be really, really fun. I'll tell you what, one of my best memories is watching that Warriors team win that finals against the Boston Celtics. I was there with Chris and Craig, who was there, and I'll tell you what, man, that was great for the fans, but working those things, the parade and stuff, it's magical to watch those things come together, to be there until 2 a.m. in the morning, catching flights at 4 a.m. to go see the now wifey in Southern California, man. It's a grind, but it's worth it. But I tell you what, man, working with Tim and James Kincaid, who I'm sure is crying in his morning beer because the Padres lost yesterday, and RC Davis is a really good time. They're all great people. But I tell you what, man, Warrior fans, for as maybe as the season didn't go their way last year, they are tuned in every single day. Post-game shows, pre-game shows, the game itself, the mornings after, it does not matter. Golden State Warrior fans are some of the most passionate fans in all of sports.
You know what I got to say to you and those people that worked or were intimately close to the Golden State Warriors winning that title against the Boston Celtics, especially all the fans out there? I'm going to quote Tony Soprano when he finally catches the guy that had shot his nephew, Christopher. And he gets the guy, and he's alone in a room, and this guy knows what's going to happen. And Tony is prolonging the inevitable and is giving him something to drink because the guy's so nervous, and he's begging for his life because he just shot his nephew. And so Tony's giving him a Pepsi. He says, that's all right. Relax. Drink your Pepsi. And so the guy's nervously drinking his Pepsi, and then Tony Soprano says, did you enjoy that Pepsi? And the guy says, yes, thank you, Tony. He's like, good. Because it's the last one you're ever going to taste, and then proceeds to shoot him. So when it comes to you Warrior fans and the Boston Celtics and that championship, enjoy it, because I think it's going to be a long time in between the next time you're dancing in the streets and celebrating down Market Street. I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're just witnessing a little transition here. until the Warriors identify the next core or really put together what is going to be the semblance of another run at a Western Conference title and getting back in the conversation of being in the upper half of the West. But as of right now, they're going to be fun. They're going to be entertaining. But they're going to be more shtick than substance, I think, when you think about the Golden State Warriors and shooting threes this year. I do want to see the emergence of Trayce Jackson-Davis, who has become my favorite Golden State Warrior. I love that kid. Like everybody else. Pajemski's interesting. So who is your starting two guard? I'll give you three guys from which to choose.
Okay.
You got De'Anthony Melton. You got Buddy Hield. And I'm going to throw in there Moses Moody. Who is it?
Ooh.
And Pajemski obviously has his name in that hat.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that Steve Kerr has talked about Pajemski, even dating back to last year, obviously started a lot of games last year for this team. I think you have to go Pods. I mean, he knows the offense. He knows the way Steve Kerr wants to operate. He's a great defender, at least, you know, getting steals and getting blocks last year. Like, he was an all-around shock and surprise for myself. But, you know, if he can start and establish himself next to Stephen Curry in that backcourt, I mean, you have Moses Moody, you have De'Anthony Melton, you have Buddy Hield playing their roles on the bench. It only makes you deeper. The Pods can be either point guard, shooting guard. I mean, I don't know how you walked away from last year saying, this kid has something special. I don't know how high the ceiling is for him, but he can do things and excel in a Steve Kerr-led Warriors team.
I'd like to see Moses Moody get that number two spot.
Okay.
I think that the one thing about this shooting the three and doing it without any hesitancy really benefits somebody like that of Moses Moody. Because I think Moses Moody sort of, part of his personality, because he's such a nice guy and he's a bit of an introvert, seems sort of on the quiet and the shy side, is that he's always looking to defer, especially if he's got Steph Curry out there, especially if he's got Draymond Green and Wiggins. He's looking to set up other guys. He's a hustle player that's going to get rebounds, and you know he'll shoot his if he has an opportunity. But now Steve Kerr is telling everybody, especially specific to that of Moses Moody, pull the trigger, young fella. Don't think about it. Just have it be habitual. Just let that be instinctive is the word I'm looking for. Just let it go. Shoot that basketball. Make your move and go. Shoot that three. And I think what Moses Moody gives you at that two spot, and I know there's a lot of Moses Moody fans out there, but I just think that when I think about him, I think about, I like big guards. I like big two guards. And so, you know, he gives you a height. Because you're a little bit smaller if you go Pajemski and Steph Curry in that backcourt.
Right.
And I think that Moody gives you, he gives you length. I think he's a good defender, and he could shoot it. He could shoot it. I think Moses Moody as that number two would be a lot of fun. Now, I think a lot of it depends on, well, who's your front court? Because that hasn't been decided either. So it depends on if you establish your front court, then your back court sort of has to work in concert with the guys up front. So depending, I guess, a lot depends on who it is that's going to be the starting front court. So let's go there. I'm going Moses Moody at the two.
Well, with Moses Moody, my biggest concern and the reason why maybe I wouldn't lean towards him is even last year when Moses was playing some of the best ball on the team, Steve wouldn't even play him.
Yeah.
Like, that's my concern of, okay, let's say Moody's more aggressive with the ball, shooting threes, attacking the basket, and isn't, you know, deferring as much like Steve doesn't want him to. There's no promise Steve even plays him. And that's my biggest, like, okay, like, if you want him to be aggressive and attack the rim and shoot the ball and, you know, pull the trigger more often, what if he does do that? And even if he plays well, Is Kerr even going to say, okay, go out there and give me 17, 20 minutes a night? I don't know if Kerr will.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because either it could be feast or famine. I'd like to see him start, but if he doesn't start, he can get buried once again.
Right, they got, may not play at all.
Yeah, they got a lot, including slow-mo. They got a lot of guys that are in that similar sort of position and situation as like that of a year ago where he just would get in the back of the line. Okay, but let's just, for the sake of this conversation, who is your starting front court? Because I think, I don't know if any of this has been established. A lot of people say, well, Draymond Green definitely is going to be in there. I'm not so sure, but who do you like?
Oh, well, explain that first. Why would Draymond Green not be there?
Well, I just think that there's some belief that maybe Draymond is better coming off the bench, that you want to preserve him. just because of the wear and tear. A guy who's now, I want to say, in his age 35 season, that Draymond might be better with that second unit. And that I'm not, look, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think Steve Kerr has intimated as much that he doesn't know, aside from Steph Curry, that anybody has really locked down a starting position. But I think that Draymond Green is going to be your starting four, right?
Okay.
Then it becomes, okay, well, then who's at the three and who's your starting center? Because are you going to put Kuminga at the three? And if you do that, Steve Kerr doesn't like him playing the three, especially if he hasn't established that he can shoot the three. And Andrew Wiggins is probably better equipped to shoot or start at the three. Does Draymond Green go back to this unconventional five? So who is it? Who do you – I'll just tell you who it is that I like. Trayce Jackson in the middle.
Okay.
Give me Andrew Wiggins. Yes, I'll roll the dice that Andrew Wiggins can somehow be that guy of a couple of years ago, although I know he'll crawl into his hole at times throughout the season and be the disappearing act of Mr. Houdini. But I like Andrew Wiggins at – well, God, no, we got to rethink that. That means Jonathan Kuminga is not starting. Okay, let me redo this.
Right, right. It all hinges on Kuminga.
Let me start.
Is Kuminga for your four? And let's say for your sake, your lineup thus far is Curry and Moody. Do you go Kuminga because you want the explosiveness playing with Curry alongside him, which means then Draymond is your four and Looney or Trayce Jackson's your five? Do you really want to do that? Where's Wiggins going to play? Is he a bench player this year? That isn't. You're paying him $26 million. He can't be a bench player for that.
Okay,
money.
Let me redo this. I'm going to go Kuminga three, Trayce Jackson Davis five, and then Draymond Green at the four. Steph Curry the one and the two. The off guard is going to be Moses Moody. Welcome to your 2024 starting lineup for the Golden State Warriors.
So your bench essentially is you have pods at the one or pods at the two coming off the bench?
Yeah, I feel good about him coming off the bench. He's not Chris Paul, obviously, but he has that sort of old soul about him where he'll calm things down, balance the floor, and he's able to connect guys.
And then you probably placed in there Buddy Hield as kind of your sharpshooter off the bench. You got Kevon Looney as the rebounder center. If that's the case, you know, I don't hate that, but then you got to find room for guys like Gary Payton II. You got to find room for players like Kyle Anderson.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Warriors, oddly enough, don't have maybe the star talent to take them to an NBA Finals, but they have a lot of veteran journeymen that can contribute off the bench and be pivotal role players for them. The issue is, you got to find room and time for all these guys because they're all going to want to play and they all can play well. I mean, even a young player like Kevin Knox, who hasn't had a great career thus far, former first-round pick of the Knicks back in the day, like, I'm sure Steve Kerr will find some way, and he'll probably have an affinity to play Kevin Knox at time. We're all going to say, why isn't Moody playing? Because Knox is getting minutes, right? So they got this oddly loaded bench behind him. I just don't know how they're going to work their magic, but that's why Steve Kerr is a four-time NBA champion as a coach and gets paid the big bucks. This is a roster full of stars and egos and a lot of bench players that, I mean, Kerr is going to have to press the right buttons. And dare I say, way more than last year, I think he has the ability or at least has the people in place to push those right buttons more often than not.
Well, thankfully, a lot of this decision-making is taken out of the hands of Steve Kerr because GP2 will go down with an injury. Andrew Wiggins will disappear at some point where you're like, okay, whether it's personal reasons or what have you, he'll leave the team.
Yeah.
And so other guys are going to get an opportunity to play. But there's depth on this team. I think Kyle Anderson, some people have talked about how he should start. And, like, listen, if slow-mo's starting, that says a lot about your basketball team because he is not a starter in this league. Buddy Hield is – I know people like Buddy Hield, but
– Boomer Sooner, baby.
Yeah, Buddy Hield is a guy – is he an Oklahoma guy? Is he?
Oh, yeah, Oklahoma. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Was he with Calvin Sampson product?
No, I don't think so,
okay.
No.
Or is it Kelvin? So, anyways, I think that Buddy Hield is – Buddy Hield is, he's a guy that never plays on a winner. He's fun to watch, but he's just a guy that is, he's a good shooter, but he's Buddy Hield at the end of the day. We know what Buddy Hield is. Buddy Hield isn't the difference between you getting to a title or is not that difference maker. He's just, he's another guy. Yes, he can shoot at three, but he also has a lot of holes in his game as well. But he's going to be fun, and we'll see how he works out with the Golden State Warriors. I just, you know, there's... You need somebody who doesn't shoot the three that's going to step up and give you points the other way. That, I think, is going to go a long way in determining just how good or how far this team will go. And what I mean by that specifically is that if you're not shooting threes well, how else are you scoring the basketball? Is Jonathan Kuminga able to slash and get to the rim? Is Andrew Wiggins, again, sort of that guy who is getting to the rim or hitting that little turnaround from 12 to 15 feet? There's got to be another way to score the basketball other than shooting the threes. And my other big concern, just to oversimplify things, if Steph Curry, who is the only proven guy that's going to give you 25 to 30 a night, is not scoring, or, and just keep in mind, I hate to go here, he has played so much basketball, including what happened in Paris and the Olympics, that if this guy blows a tire or goes down with an injury, as he has been prone to do, although last year he played his most games since, I want to say, 2016, if he's not available, who scores the basketball consistently for you for the Golden State Warriors in 2024?
Well, I think right there, your biggest concern is kind of what you were hinting at in your first point of the three position. Small forward is the most pivotal position on this team. It has two players that are the ones that maybe aren't the best three-point shooters on the team, but they're the ones that can cut to the basket the easiest. Kuminga, I think, is the most important player on this team. Andrew Wiggins is, depending on where he plays in regards to starter or bench, might be the most important role player on this team. If those two guys can give you something, if Wiggins can go back to a 15-point-a-night guy and Kuminga can transcend where he was last year, you're going to win more games. You're going to be a more versatile offense. So Kuminga and Wiggins are the two most important players on this team, not named Stephen Curry. And that's what it was last year, and it didn't work out. There were some bright spots, but ultimately you fell short of your goal. You lost two playing games in a row. It was night for the season. So, this team is going to have to find a way to operate when Steph's not working, when maybe he's having an off night, which isn't common at all. But Kuminga and Wiggins are this team's two most important players going into 2024, by far.
All right. Well, it's a good time to be a sports fan. Postseason baseball, there's nothing like it. It's why Buster Posey and company got to get the Giants back into October and playing significant baseball games. The Warriors right around the corner. NBA is here. And, of course, the 49ers were getting knee-deep into the season. And the Sharks and the NHL doing their thing as well. For my man, Sterling Bennett. Sterling, by the way, get back to that town of yours, population 14.
Witness protection. Don't tell anybody, Dan.
Sterling Bennett and, of course, my man Rosie Risotto and Cam. This is Dan Avone. Until next time, enjoy the rest of the weekend. So long, everybody.